You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
The Every Owl Trojan is interested in what's on your Windows clipboard. The healthcare sector continues its struggle to recover from SamSam ransomware. People raise the possibility that Olympic timekeeping could be hacked. Russian troll farms are barking at the U.S. House Intelligence Committee and the Czech presidential runoff election. Some notes on crime and possible punishment. And there are two new theories about Satoshi Nakamoto. I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Monday, January 22nd, 2018. A new Trojan, Evryal, has been discovered. It can snoop through browser cookies and stored credentials, which is unpleasant but not particularly novel when it comes to crimeware. But Evryal is different in that it also scans the contents of Windows clipboard, and it not only scans, but it can also identify and replace strings of interest in that clipboard. Criminals are using this functionality to replace strings with code that can redirect Bitcoin payments to their own wallets. Malware Hunter Team, one of the discoverers of Evryal, says that the code is being sold on Russian criminal fora for the low, low price of about $27. It's become a very popular offering in the criminal-to-criminal market. Why, one might ask, is this useful in stealing Bitcoin? Here's why. Bitcoin addresses are difficult to type. They're complicated pieces of text. So the typical way people handle the addresses is to copy them and then paste them into the relevant app that's doing the sending. Since most people don't check their cutting and pasting, the imposture is likely to succeed. We've called the motive Bitcoin theft, but really Bitcoin stands for several other kinds of strings the crooks are interested in copying. Bleeping Computer, in their useful account of Evryal, points out that the malware is configured to recognize strings that correspond to Bitcoin, Litecoin, Monero, Web Money, Kiwi addresses, and Steam items trade URLs. How Evryal is being distributed isn't clear yet, so the best advice out on protecting yourself is that old standby. Practice good digital hygiene and be especially alert for phishing attempts. This month's wave of SamSam ransomware crests in the healthcare sector. Allscripts, a leading electronic health record provider, continues its recovery from the infestation disclosed last week. Its electronic prescriptions for controlled substances, EPCS for short, was restored Saturday. But other services remain only partially recovered. Allscripts is working closely with its customers to bring their systems back online. Here's something to worry about, Olympic fans. In between the tear-jerking and inspirational stories of hardscrabble athletes and the obstacles they've overcome to reach the Pyeongchang Games, now you can wonder if all those wireless sensors that time bobsled runs to the hundredth of a second are being manipulated by hackers to tilt the results one way or another. Or so says an op-ed in USA Today by Betsy Cooper, executive director of the Center for Long-Term Cybersecurity at the University of California, Berkeley. And it's not just bobsledding, but also alpine skiing, speed skating, presumably luge, and maybe skeleton too. Why would someone cheat like this? Well, to speculate, there's always national pride as a motive, not to mention the prospect of lucrative commercial endorsements post-games. But here's an obvious motive. Why not just transpose anger at the Olympic Committee to an effort to discredit the whole process? It's happened with anti-doping doxing. So let the official timekeepers look to the security of their particular IoT. The games open on February 9th. Twitter continues to notify users that they've interacted with bots from the Internet Research Agency, the now famous St. Petersburg troll farm. This is part of Twitter's response to concerns about the platform's role in spreading fake news. If you know it's a bot, the thinking goes, you're less likely to credit what it's telling you. Twitter has pegged just over 3,800 accounts as Internet Research Agency trolls, and it's contacting people to let them know that they either followed or retweeted stuff from them. U.S. Senator John Cornyn, Republican of Texas, is among those who received a notice, and he's tweeted what they told him, with full approval that social media are, quote, finally waking up to manipulation of public opinion by our adversaries, end quote. In any case, Russian bots show no sign of scuttling into the darkness to avoid the light being shined on them. In fact, they appear to have shown a new flurry of activity over the weekend. Tweeting toward Washington, the bots call for the release of a FISA memorandum prepared by House Intelligence Committee staff. The memos said by the bots and others to be explosive, and perhaps good government would be served by its release, but that's not what they're interested in around Moscow and St. Petersburg. The committee chair, Representative Devin Nunes, Republican of California, is being asked to release a classified memo on alleged FISA abuses. Social media trolling is also on the upswing in the Czech Republic as the Czechs conduct their presidential runoff elections between challenger Jiří Drahoš and incumbent Miloš Zeman. Radio Liberty says the trolls have for the most part been snapping at Drahoš with a wide mix of scurrilous and outlandish accusations. In news of cybercrime and punishment, we'll take college cut-ups for 100, Alex. And the answer is, the former history professor at Adrian College accused of hacking the college president's and vice president's email accounts. The question is, who is former Jeopardy champion Stephanie Joss? Ms. Joss, charged in December with unauthorized access to a computer, program, and network and using a computer to commit a crime, waived a preliminary examination and will appear for a pretrial hearing in Michigan on February 28th. There's also news of the crackers with attitude, those madcap hactivists with a more or less pro-Palestinian bent, who succeeded in compromising a lot of email accounts belonging to senior officials in the U.S. intelligence community. The FBI popped two of the stateside alleged conspirators back in 2016. They're Californians. But the alleged ringleader was British. Cain Gamble, the alleged head cracker, was also arrested in 2016, but he was in England. Mr. Gamble, who was only 15 years old at the time of his arrest, appeared in Leicester Crown Court last week and described how he was able to impersonate former U.S. Director of Central Intelligence John Brennan to access highly classified information. Mr. Gamble's counsel argues that the defendant is on the autism spectrum. They'll be offering, apparently, a reduced capacity defense. Finally, we turn to what may be the fever swamps of wild conspiracy theory. Or are they? Sputnik News reports that Natalia Kaspersky, Eugene's ex and co-founder of their eponymous security company Kaspersky Lab, has said she knows who the real Satoshi Nakamoto is. He is, Ms. Kasperskaya says, No single person, but rather a crew of crypto experts working within the U.S. intelligence community. They created Bitcoin as Dollar 2.0, she said, the better to advance the Five Eyes' interests around the world. Crazy, no? Or is it? Other people have a different theory from another part of the fever swamp. Roughly that part that maintains NASA Goldstone is an entry portal for an underground network of caves used by gray aliens. This theory holds that Satoshi isn't even human, and that Bitcoin is the work of a rogue AI. So take your pick. It seems that Satoshi Nakamoto was either Jim Clapper or Skynet. Unless those are the same person. Come to think of it, we've never seen the two of them in the same place. But that's a coincidence, right? Or is it? And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Malek Ben-Salem. She's the R&D manager for security at Accenture Technology Labs. Malek, welcome back. We wanted to talk today about some of the challenges when it comes to deploying some of these next generation crypto technologies.
Yes, so there's a lot of talk about post-quantum cryptography and the need for developing new quantum-safe crypto algorithms, crypto systems. NIST is working on that, their call for new algorithms. And so there's a lot of talk among the community and a lot of focus on developing those algorithms that are quantum safe and fault tolerant. But there's less discussion about the journey that it will take us to deploy these algorithms once they exist. Once NIST publishes its standards for post-quantum crypto systems, how long would it take us to deploy this? I think based on prior crypto deployments, we can definitely assert that this will take a very long time, probably a time by which quantum computers will be able to break a lot of the existing crypto systems that we have today.
So when you say take a long time, what kind of time scale are we talking about?
So it's hard to predict, but a recent study about deployment of HTTPS, for example, just shows that we're not there yet. You know, if you think about HTTP over TLS, that protocol, the TLS protocol, has been out there since the late 1990s. SSL has been published in the early 1990s. But according to this study, only 69% of the top 100 websites do offer HTTPS, and only roughly about 50% of them offer it by default. If you look at the top 1 million websites, that number drops down to probably half of that. So we have a long journey before we adopt these secure protocols. The same applies to DNSSEC, so DNS security extensions. In the early 1990s, Steve Belovin identified a problem with the DNS protocol, and there was an RFC published in the mid-1990s. But a recent study has also looked at the use of DNSSEC, and they identified that it's still rather limited. For instance, while a lot of the big domains apply it, so more than 90% of the top-level domains or TLDs and 47% of the country code TLDs are DNSSEC-enabled, the use of it is not deployed properly. A lot of these domains produce records that cannot be validated due to missing or incorrect records. So even if the technology exists, what I'd like to caution out here is that we need to work on the processes to deploy the technology. We need to work on training the individuals deploying this technology. So it's really time to start building awareness about the change that needs to happen once we have these post-quantum crypto algorithms and standards.
And it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff as always. Malek Ben-Salem, thanks for joining us.
Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit criticalstart.com and request a demo today. That's criticalstart.com.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Puru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Ivan, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.